2.06. He had always dreaded this, but now that it was his life, he knew there had been nothing to fear. In the world of flesh, his body had been aging and weakening, but here, in this world of amniotic suspension, he was all-powerful and all-conquering. In a simulated engine war, Princeps Cavallario fought and killed like a living metal god, bestriding the virtual arena like a colossus of battle. His enemies died. Skitari crushed underfoot. Reavers torn to pieces in the terrible, smashing hell of engine combat, and warlords blasted apart with weapons fire in murderous killing salvos. The world of flesh was over for Cavallario. The world of metal was now his domain. Liquid data spiraled around him, fed to him through receptors implanted beneath his skin, filling his sensory apparatus with information that would overwhelm the brains of those less augmented than he. Darts of light, each one carrying a welter of data, swirled around him like shoals of glowing fish as he ended yet another simulation as the victor. Cavallario was unrecognizable as the spare, limping mortal that had walked the surface of Mars. A man he had been, but a creation of the Mechanicum he was now. His pallid flesh floated in nutrient-rich jelly, hung from a multitude of cables that connected him to the world around him in ways too numerous to count. Each day since his incarceration within the casket brought new attachments, new augmetics, and new sensations. Only now did he realize how imperfect had his existence been as a mere mortal, confined to a mere five senses. A thick, inflexible cable pierced his spine between the lumbar vertebrae, while other, more delicate wires were plugged into his eye sockets. A forest of cables extruded from the rear of his cranial cavity that would link to the manifold when he once again took charge of an engine. Both arms were encased in metal to his elbows, and both his feet had been amputated and replaced with haptic sheaths. The transition had been difficult and not without setbacks, but his famulus, Agathy, had been with him every step of the way, soothing him, cajoling him, and encouraging him to overcome every problem. Though initially hostile to the idea of a famulus, Cavallario now appreciated how vital such a person was when you were confined to an amniotic tank. The terrible, aching loss of Victorix Magna still haunted his nightmares, as he knew it would for the rest of his days. No Princeps survived the death of his engine without psychological scarring, but with every simulated engagement, his warlike confidence grew stronger. Soon his ability to command an engine became faster and more efficient, until he knew he was better than he ever had been in his previous life. As this latest simulation came to an end, the fury of battle and the exhilaration of connection faded from his consciousness with a sharp pang of regret. It wasn't the same as physically disengaging from an engine, but it was close, and he could already feel the hunger to go back in, creeping at the edge of his psyche. "How did I ever exist before this?" he canted in a soft sigh of binary. His awareness of the world around him swam into focus as the images of battle faded like banished phantoms. Slowly, the world of reality began to impose itself on his perception. Though Cavallario no longer saw the world as he once had, the sensorium installed as part of his casket allowed him even greater acuity than ever before. He identified the biometrics of the two people standing in his casket chamber before any visual recognition was made. He could see Agathy's physical form, which was short and slightly rounded, as well as reading her biometrics and the electrical field densities of her subtle augmetics. Her noospheric modifications flickered, and tiny geysers of data light streamed above her head. The second figure was Princeps Sharak. "My Princeps," said Agathy, startled by his sudden vocalization. "Do you require anything?"
"No, Agathy. I was just thinking aloud."
"Congratulations on another successful engagement, Indias," said Sharak.
"Thank you, Kel," said Cavallario. "Did you see how I took down the second warlord?"
Sharak smiled, and Cavallario read the genuine pleasure his friend took in the accomplishment.
"I saw it, my Princeps. Masterful."
"I know," said Cavallario, without arrogance. "I am faster and more cohesive in my command than ever before. I merely think an order, and the engine responds. Data streams into me straight from the manifold, which increases my reaction and response times by an average of 9.7%. That's more than the difference between life and death in an engine fight.
That's good to hear, said Sharrock. You're adjusting well, then?
I am, Kel. I am. My days are full. I fight simulated engagements every day, though only Agathy watches me now. Between my battles and surgery, Princeps Cassim comes to check on my progress, and we share stories of our glorious Legio's history.
And the casket?
Asked Sharrock.
You don't miss. Well,
flesh? Cavallario hesitated before answering. It was difficult, he admitted at last. For the longest time, I thought I would go mad in here. But Agathy has helped many a Princeps adjust to his new life. And, as time went on, I began to understand that this was what I was destined for.
Destined?
Yes, Kel, destined. I don't know why I resisted immersion for all those years. I link with the Manifold, and it's so much closer than it was before. When I commanded Victorix Magna, I could feel what she felt, but it was borrowed sensation. Now, I am the engine. This shouldn't be the last resort of an aging or injured Princeps. This should be the standard method of command for all the bigger engines.
I think you might have a hard time convincing some of the diehards of that.
Not if they knew what I know, said Cavallario. But what say we dispense with this small talk and discuss the real reason for your visit?
Sharrock nodded, circling the tank with the awe of one in the presence of greatness, and Cavallario read his unease in his increased heart rate and spiking alpha waves.
It's all right, Kel, said Cavallario. You don't need to feel guilty. You did what you had to do, and I would have been disappointed if you hadn't.
Sharrock stopped his circling and knelt before the casket, placing his hand on the warm glass of the tank. Cavallario floated to the front, his flesh marbled and glossy, his features all but obscured by the complex bionics that grafted him to the machinery of his life support. Only an inch of toughened glass separated the two men, but an anatomy's worth of augmetics created a gulf between their humanity.
I don't feel guilty, said Sharrock. I know I did the right thing. You weren't fit to command the Legio then, and despite your progress, I still don't think you're ready. Soon, but not yet.
Then why are you here?
I need your help, Stormlord, said Sharrock. And I need your experience. I fear I am not cut from the same cloth as you. Leadership is in your blood, but not in mine.
Then speak, ordered Cavallario. I may not be Princeps Senioris, but I am still your friend.
The words were meant to comfort Sharrock, but only seemed to wound him. He looked over at Agathy and said,
Perhaps we might speak privately, my Princeps.
Agathy is my famulus, and anything you have to say to me can be said in front of her.
Very well, Stormlord, said Sharrock. You won't have failed to notice that you haven't been linked to any ports with outside access during your recovery. The Medicae felt it would hinder your adjustment for you to be inloaded with an excess of data.
A decision that, with hindsight, I applaud, said Cavallario. So tell me, what's been happening beyond our fortress? Have Mortis been taken to task for their violation of our territory?
Sharrock shook his head.
No, my lord, he said. They have not. The Princeps Conciliatus have been appraised of the facts, and they have issued a summons, but both the Fabricator General and Princeps Camulos ignore it.
A Conciliatus summons and a rift between the Legios? Ignored? Madness.
All of Mars may well have gone mad, my Princeps,
agreed Sharrock.
What do you mean?
Sharrock shared a look with Agathy and said,
The situation on Mars has deteriorated almost to the point of open warfare. Disaster strikes at the Mechanicum from all sides, and we are petitioned daily for our engines to walk.
Petitioned by whom?
I have received missives from no less than 17 forges, all begging us to initiate an execution. With your permission, my Princeps, I should like to inload your casket with the latest updates on the current tactical situation.
Of course, Kel, said Cavallario. Immediately.
Sharrock said nothing and didn't appear to move, but Cavallario felt a rush of data as his fellow Princeps neuspherically unlocked the feeds that were part of the Martian network and which fed directly into the smart liquid of his casket.
blood of the Omnisire, hissed Cavallario, as the data permeated his mind via informational osmosis. In an instant, he drank in the terrible events of the death of innocence, caused by the hateful scrap code, the spate of catastrophic machine failures, and the rising tide of violence erupting all across the surface of Mars. He saw bloodshed as forges went to war and old feuds were reignited. He saw opportunistic territorial grabs, spiteful acts of vengeance, and hungry snatches for a rival's knowledge. The drums of battle were beating all over Mars, stirring the bellicose hearts of man, and spurring the looming presence of civil war ever closer. It saddened him to realize that, a race apart though they might be, the Mechanicum were just as prone to human foibles as their unmodified brethren.
And this scrap code attack came just as Mortis walked on Ascreus Mons.
We caught the first spurts of it, I think, said Sharak. It was fragmentary and dispersed, and Zeth's new spheric upgrade saved us from getting hit as hard as some others, but Legio Fortidus and Legio Agravides are gone. Their reactors went critical and took their entire fortress and a good chunk of the Erebus Montes with them.
Cavallario digested the information without comment, though it grieved him to think of two allied legios lost to so ignominious a fate. He reviewed the data he'd been fed impassively, sifting through the morass of contradictory communiques, orders, requests, petitions, demands, and propaganda flying between the forges. Factions were already forming, fragile alliances drawn along the lines of the tired old Omnisire schism. Blurts of cant circled the planet, some demanding an end to the union of Mars and Terra, while others urged all Mars to cleave more tightly to the bosom of humanity's birthrock. Worse, much of it had gone off-world, spreading like a plague on departing ships, or within astropathic visions cast across the void to the Mechanicum contingents accompanying the expedition fleets throughout the galaxy.
"What's all this talk of Horus Lupercal?" asked Cavallario, reading the binary version of the first Primarch's name time and time again. "What does the Warmaster have to do with any of this?"
"We're not sure, my princeps," said Sharak. "The factions advocating the split from Terra seem to be championing the Warmaster as their deliverer from the Emperor. It's hard to make much sense of it. Their code is so corrupt it's little more than binary screams of the Warmaster's name."
"Has word of this reached Terra?"
"The intersystem vox is erratic, but Adept Maximal has apparently made intermittent contact with the Council of Terra."
"And what do they make of all this?"
"It sounds like they're as confused as us, my princeps," said Sharak, taking a deep breath before continuing. "Something bad has happened in the Istvan system. Something to do with the Astartes, but we can't get any hard facts."
"But what of Mars?" pressed Cavallario. "What do they say about Mars?"
"The Mechanicum is told to quell the unrest, or the legions will do it for them."
The maglev made good time through the southern reaches of the Tharsis uplands, skirting the edge of the Palladus and passing through a number of storms of wind-blown particulate on its journey eastwards. Dahlia found the sight of the billowing ash strangely uplifting and spent hours watching the spiraling vortices streaming down the length of the carriages. She watched the dust rolling on and on throughout the landscape and envied its freedom to roam, blown hither and thither without direction by the winds. Increasingly, she felt as though her life was just like the maglev, travelling upon a fixed track, guided inexorably forward to an inevitable destination. The notion of free will and choice seemed alien and strange to her, as though her brain was merely responding to external stimuli, and she had no choice but to obey. They saw little of their fellow passengers during the journey, save for the occasional awkward passing in the corridors to and from the ablutions cubicles or food dispensers. Dahlia recognized most of them as low-level adepts on errands for their masters, servitors on automatic reassignment, or migrant laborers moving to another forge in the hope of securing work. Perhaps 300 souls traveled with them, but no one paid them any mind, a fact for which Dahlia was absurdly grateful. The thrill of venturing beyond the boundaries of the forge had worn thin for their little group after a few hours, and they had fallen into the strange silence of travelers on a long journey with nothing to help pass the time. The prospect of seeing one of the otherworldly Palladus border towns had excited them, but even that had proven something of a letdown. As the maglev had approached Ash Border, they all roused themselves to see what one of these frontier towns looked like,
for none of them had ventured beyond the hives of Mars's more populated regions. Dahlia read his threat auspex switched to active as they came within range of the settlement's network antenna. She didn't mention that fact to the others. Ash Border had proved to be both exotic and slightly dull at the same time, with dusty ore silos, rusted salvage barns, and tall drilling machinery dominating the skyline. But with the memory of a Mechanicum forge still bright in their minds, the minor industrial complex of Ash Border seemed small and underwhelming. The inhabitants were sullen-faced men and women with weather-beaten faces and clothes scoured identical by coarse ash. They offered no welcome and disappeared back to their ramshackle dwellings as soon as their cargo was unloaded by a handful of archaic lifter servitors. Dunetown lived up to its name and proved to be no less prosaic, with even more outmoded servitors unloading the allocated inventory before the maglev set off towards Crater Edge. By now they had been travelling for a day and a half. Tiredness was beginning to tell, and sleep was hard to come by. Though the ride was smooth, the compartment seats had been designed with functional practicality in mind, rather than comfort. None of them had been able to muster much enthusiasm to watch Zeus's projection of the view from the driver's compartment as they approached Crater Edge. But when the maglev halted at the raised dock, it was quickly evident that something was different. The place was abandoned. The dwellings were empty and the streets deserted. But it was impossible to tell whether the inhabitants had been driven away or left of their own volition. The maglev was on an automated schedule, so the mystery went unexplained, and the mining supplies allocated for the township remained in the snaking transport's holds as it pulled away. No sooner had Crater Edge vanished into the dust and haze than Dahlia felt a weight she hadn't even been aware of lift from her shoulders, as though some creeping sickness lingered around the township. The place had just felt wrong. Not the wrongness of disease or death, but a gurgling hiss of wet code laughter she caught drifting on the airwaves. Red Gorge was similarly deserted, the strange whispering code ghosting around it as well. Dahlia caught Romeo 31 twitching as he heard it too, an insistent scratching that irritated the corners of the mind like an embedded flea. She caught his eye as the maglev pulled away, and they saw each other's awareness of the bad code on the air. Romeo 31 shook his head, and she took his meaning clearly enough. Say nothing. At last the maglev began the approach to the jagged line of peaks that separated the Tharsis uplands from the magnificent expanse of the Syria Plainum. After a long looping journey southwards, the maglev turned north to begin the slow climb over the upthrust spires of rock pushed up and over one another in an ongoing geological collision. The skies beyond the escarpment were dark and shot through with scarlet lightning, as though a great firestorm was brewing. It had been a long journey, and the sight of the two deserted townships had unsettled everyone. They had all heard tales of settlements abandoned when the ore or whatever had originally drawn the settlers there had dried up, but Red Gorge and Crater Edge hadn't felt abandoned. They had felt empty, as though the people there had just vanished, gone in a heartbeat.
Perhaps they were press-ganged, suggested Severine. I've heard of that. A forge master isn't going to meet his quota and sends his protectors out into the wastelands to capture more people to work in their forges.
Don't be ridiculous, said Caxton. That's just scare stories.
Is it? Challenged Severine.
How do you know?
I just do, all right?
Oh, well, I feel better already.
What do you say, Romeo 31?
Asked Zeus in a tone of doom-laden theatrics.
Has Adept Zeth ever sent you off to procure slaves to toil in her volcanic forge?
From time to time, admitted the Protector.
That shut them all up.
You're joking, right? Said Caxton.
Tell me you're joking.
I am Mechanicum, said Romeo 31. We never joke.
Dahlia looked into the green orbs of Romeo 31's eyes, and though they were devoid of anything resembling humanity, she saw the wry amusement written in his electrical field. She smiled at the horrified expressions on her friends' faces and turned away so as not to spoil Romeo 31's fun.
That's terrible, said Severine.
The Mechanicum uses slaves,
was Caxton's disgusted comment.
I thought more of you, Romeo 31, said Zeus. I thought more of Adept Zeth.
When he judged the silence had gone on long enough, Romeo 31 leaned menacingly towards them and said,
"Got you."
A moment's stunned silence followed Romeo 31's words, and then the tension in the compartment was suddenly, explosively, relieved by hysterical laughter.
"That wasn't funny,"
said Caxton, between laughing and wiping tears from his eyes.
"No," agreed Severin. "You shouldn't say things like that."
"Why? Can't I make a joke?"
asked Romeo 31.
"I think they're just surprised that you made one at all,"
put in Dahlia, looking back into the compartment.
"I don't think they're used to the Mechanicum trying to be funny."
Romeo 31 nodded and said, "I may be Mechanicum, but I am still human." With that, the strange unease that had settled on them at the sight of the deserted townships was dispelled, and they began chatting as animatedly as when they had built the first version of the Akashic Reader. The excitement of the journey into the unknown was rekindled, and as the maglev made its way uphill, Zeus extended a discreet dendrite and plugged into the compartment's data port, projecting the view from the hull-mounted picture onto the glass of the window. They eagerly watched the feed as Zeus panned the image around. They saw the desolate plains stretching away to the south and the black smudge on the horizon above the magma city nearly 2,000 kilometers away. At Caxton's request, Zeus returned the view to front on, and the image shimmered as it displayed the silver mag line carrying them up into the mountains. Dahlia let out a tiny gasp of fear as she saw the mag line vanish into a gaping steel-lined cavern mouth that pierced the flanks of the cliffs and led through the rock towards Mondus Gamma. She took Caxton's hand and gripped it tightly as the tunnel drew nearer, the yawning blackness of it suddenly terrifying.
"What's the matter?" he asked. "I didn't realize we'd need to go through the darkness," she said.
"It's just a tunnel," said Caxton.
"There's nothing to worry about."
The forces of the Fabricator General came for Adept Zeth several hours before Dahlia's maglev approached the tunnel connecting the Tharsis uplands with the Syria Planum. A Mechanicum heavy flyer cruised in from the northwest and sat down on the statue-lined Typhon Causeway before the Magma City, scorching a score of the marble worthies black with the heat of its enormous jets. The underside of the craft shone with golden light from the bubbling, steaming lava to either side of the wide causeway. The ungainly aircraft was unarmed, but as it settled on its landing skids, a continuous loop of code streamed from its augmitters on a repeating cycle, demanding that Adept Coriel Zeth present herself by the order of the Fabricator General. The summons was broadcast in the highest and most authoritative code tense, and as such could not be ignored. The flanks of the flyer gusted steam and folded outwards, providing debarkation ramps for the warriors carried within. 300 modified Skatari and protectors marched from the flyer's hold onto the basalt causeway. Wretched by-blows of the Fabricator General's union with the power unlocked in the depths of the forgotten vaults beneath Olympus Mons, these were twisted perversions of their original martial glory. Hunched carapaces, spiked armor, and horned helmets clad them, and their limb weapons seethed with unnatural power. The protectors were no less modified, their bodies swollen and grotesque, their weapons blackened and reforged in new and hateful shapes, designed for pain as much as killing. Under the watchful gaze of armored turrets and missile emplacements cunningly worked into the walls of ceramite and adamantium of Zeth's forge, these abominable killers formed up in three separate cohorts and marched on the Vulcan Gate. Behind them came a shield palanquin borne by towering, brutish Skatari with grey skin and barbed armor. These monstrous, ogre-like warriors had been raised to such stature by more than simple gene-bulking and augmetics. Their bodies glistened, and their veins pulsed with ruddy light, as though with an internal electricity. Ambassador Melgator and Adept Regulus stood proudly atop the palanquin, clad in robes of midnight black, with their hoods drawn up over their skulls. Melgator carried a staff of ebony, topped with a snarling wolf's head, and Regulus a staff of ivory, topped with a skull of black obsidian. The host of horrifically altered warriors parted to let them through, and Regulus halted the palanquin 100 meters before the gate. The soaring adamantine glory of the Magma City's great portal was worked with silver cogs, golden eagles, and lightning bolts, and it was opening. As a widening bar of light split the two halves of the gate, and the Skitarii bustled with belligerent scrap code, Regulus raised his arms, and a streaming hash of lingua technis, irregular and arrhythmic, blurted from his internal augmitters. His skull-topped staff crackled with corpuscent, in time with his utterances, and, one by one, the turrets and weapons platforms on the wall shut down. The light of the city spilled outwards in a growing fan of orange light, throwing the shadow of the slender figure that walked from the city out before her in a thin line of black. Adept Coriel Zeth swept her gaze over the assembled cohorts before fixing a distasteful stare on the two figures borne upon the palanquin, as though they were pestilential plague carriers begging entry.
"By what authority do you dare come to my city and demand my presence?" she said.
Belgator wrapped his staff on the shield palanquin, and its monstrous bearers carried it forward until it was less than 20 meters from Zeth.
"By the authority of the Fabricator General, to whom all Mars owes allegiance," canted Regulus in an all-channel squirt of binary. Zeth winced.
"That's dirty code you're using, Regulus," she answered,
reading his identity from his fizzing electric field.
"On the contrary," replied Regulus, "it is pure code, as it was meant to exist before it was tamed and shackled to the will of flesh."
"If you can't see the flaw in that line of reasoning, then you are beyond the reach of my logic," said Zeth. "Now, speak your piece and begone. I have work to do."
"That will not be possible, Zeth," said Melgator. "We are here to escort you to Olympus Mons, where you will submit to the judgment of the Fabricator General."
"My title is Adept Zeth. I believe I have earned it," snapped the mistress of the Magma City. "And on what grounds do you dare arrest me?"
"On the grounds of your continued heresies," canted Melgator. "To wit, your continued refutation of the Machine God, your refusal to support the policies and regime of the Fabricator General, and lastly, for allowing non-cult Mechanicum personnel to work on divine machinery. For these charges you will be placed in our custody, and returned to Olympus Mons to await trial for tech heresy." Zeth said nothing for a moment, letting the weight of the accusation settle on her. Then she laughed, the sound echoing from the mountainside, carried far and wide across the length and breadth of the causeway.
"You mock these accusations," snapped Regulus. "Is there no end to your wickedness?"
"Oh, I absolutely mock them," sneered Zeth. "They are laughable. And if you weren't so blinded by what Kelbor Hal has turned you into, you would see that."
She swept an arm out, her gesture encompassing the gathered Skitarii and protectors.
"These monstrous things you bring to my forge, they are abominations of flesh and machine, freakish hybrids worse than the feral scrap shunt rejects that wander the Palladus. You have turned all that is beautiful of the Mechanicum into something dark, and it horrifies me that you cannot see it. So yes, I mock your accusations, and more. I refuse to recognize your right to accuse me."
"Then you refuse the summons of the Fabricator General?" asked Regulus, his code laced with eagerness to unleash the Skitarii.
"You understand the severity of this action?"
"I do,"
confirmed Zeth.
"Then we will take you by force," said Melgator.
"You can try," said Zeth.
Melgator aimed his staff at the walls and said,
"You will either come with us or you will be destroyed, Zeth. Link with your wall defenses and you will see they are shut down. We control the code now."
The three cohorts of Skitarii began to march forward, flame lances, energy halberds, and limb weapons, arming in a flurry of crackling activations and clattering autoloaders.
"Not all of it, you don't,"
said Zeth, as a pair of enormous mechanical forms marched into the gateway behind her. 9 meters tall, the two knights dwarfed the slight form of Adept Zeth, and the deep blue of their armored plates shimmered with the reflected glow of the magma lake. The proud heraldry of a wheel encircling a lightning bolt was emblazoned on their shoulder guards, and they rode from the gateway to stand behind Adept Zeth with their energy lances and gatling cannons trained on the approaching Skitarii. Behind them, a dozen more knights took position in line abreast to block entry to the Magma City with their majestic forms. The march of the altered Skitarii faltered, and they milled in confusion in the face of the war machines, their packmasters squalling for orders.
Regulus emitted a panicked burst of code, the same mutant algorithms he had used to shut down the wall guns, but the knights ignored him. Their system shut off to incoming code.
"This is Lord Catorix of the Order of Taranis," said Zeth, indicating the knight on her left, its aggressive posture making no secret of its desire to wreak harm. "And this is Preceptor Stator. Their order is an ally of this forge, and if that flyer is not off my causeway in 5 minutes, they are going to ride out with their warriors and destroy you. Do you understand the severity of this action?"
"You dare threaten an emissary of the Fabricator General?" cried Melgator. "You are a disgrace to the Mechanicum, Zeth."
"Your assassin destroys the mind of my apprentice, and then murders one of my acolytes, and you dare call me a disgrace to the Mechanicum?" snarled Zeth.
She consulted her internal chronometer and said,
4 minutes and 40 seconds, Melgator. I suggest you get moving."
"You will regret this," promised Regulus. "We will see your city in ruins and your legacy expunged from all records." The knights took a step forwards, the hiss and clank of their metal limbs sounding dreadfully loud. Melgator wrapped his staff on the shield palanquin and, without another word, he and Regulus withdrew. A hurried code squeal recalled the Skitarii, and they marched with bitter disappointment back onto the heavy flyer. As its flanks folded up and it took to the air, the lead knight turned its cockpit towards Zeth, and a new spheric link opened between them.
"You should have let me kill them," said Lord Catorix.
"Maybe," agreed Zeth, "but I have a feeling you'll get another chance."
"You think they'll be back?"
"I know they will, Lord Catorix. But next time they won't be so arrogant," said Zeth. "I have to send word of this to Maximal and Kane. Kelb or Hal might come for them next, and I need to petition Legio Tempestus once more. I have a feeling we'll be needing some larger engines to defend the Magma City in the days ahead."
"The support of Tempestus would be most welcome," agreed Catorix. "In the meantime, we will continue to stand with you. What would you have us do?"
Zeth watched the blue-hot glow of the departing flyer's engines.
"Prepare for battle," she said.